Welcome to episode 19 of the Patterson Podcast. This is your host, David Mitchell. In each episode, we share tips and tools from the Patterson process and share stories of leaders who've been impacted along the way. In today's episode, we're speaking with Kristen Candela. Kristen is the Executive Director of Habitat for Humanity in Fort Collins. Habitat for Humanity is a global nonprofit helping millions of people around the world, low-income families who can't afford a home otherwise. Habitat for Humanity steps in, rallies volunteers, and helps them to build homes for those in need. At Habitat for Humanity here in Fort Collins, they've used the Patterson process to help them grow, to help them impact many more lives in this community. So in today's episode, we're talking specifically about the Patterson process, StratOp, how it works in a nonprofit setting. And Kristen, we're so grateful to have you with us today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to talk about StratOp.
Yeah, it's great. So Kristen, take us back to, you know, the work of the Patterson process is all about story. So take us back to the beginning in your own story. What events or things in your own life drew you to work in the nonprofit sector?
You know, I don't think I really realized what my draw was to nonprofit work. I think it was actually a draw to Habitat for Humanity, more specifically. And I think that came out of a personal life experience. I was raised by a single parent mom. And I think I see my childhood in two different parts. The part before fourth grade, before we purchased our own home, when we moved and moved and moved to different rentals. I went to different schools, different neighborhoods, had different friends, saw life as kind of turbulent, a little bit being tossed around in the waves. Until we got into fourth grade, she bought the house. It wasn't a great house. I think I remember that really fondly, that it wasn't a great house, which I think is part of the story, right? Is that it had the green sculptured carpet, the brown paneling, it had all those things. But what I knew about that house was that we were going to stay. It was stable. And I remember really distinctly knowing this is the hub. This is where my friends can come. I will stay in the same schools. I will walk to school. I knew where I stood. And it was a place of joy and of peace and security, and that's where people came. So I didn't really realize that I was necessarily drawn to nonprofit work, but I knew I was drawn to the work of Habitat for Humanity because of the tangibility of it. They built homes, and you could see them, you could drive by them, you knew families were living inside them, you could see porch lights on and families safe inside. And I think it resonated to me on a really personal level.
Wow, I did not know that story, and so just to hear from your own experience from a young age, that search, that desire for a home, for all that a home represents, belonging.
Yeah.
And now to think about the work that Habitat for Humanity does, bringing that belonging to so many others. That's beautiful.
Thank you. I think so.
So tell us then about Habitat for Humanity. A lot of us have heard of it, some haven't. What is the core kind of mission of what the work you do? What impact are you seeking to make in the world through Habitat?
Well, Habitat for Humanity, in its most simple terms, is a home builder and a mortgage lender. And I think those two pieces are equally important. So the home building piece I love, I think it's fascinating to watch. So in 70 countries all over the world, there are hundreds and hundreds of volunteers out sweating alongside a family to build a home. So the family is invested. They're giving sweat equity to build the home. The volunteers are invested. They're giving their time to support a family they might not even know. So the builder side is really important because of the investment of the community and of the home buyer. But the mortgage lending part of it is just as important because these are folks in the community who are lower income. They're hardworking, but they're earning a moderate income. So if they go to a bank, they might qualify for a loan, but in our community, they would qualify for a loan that then wouldn't buy them anything. So if they qualified for $100,000 or $150,000, but the average price now of a home in Fort Collins is over $350,000, there's nowhere to go. They become hopeless. They can't get in. So that's what Habitat for Humanity does. They allow the home to be built less expensively by being built with volunteers, and then they offer the hardworking home buyer, the family, a no-interest mortgage.
So, Kristen, you've been the executive director now here in Fort Collins for over 5 years. How are you personally a better leader today than maybe 5 years ago?
You know, I think I'm a better leader for listening to my team. And what I mean by that is, you know, I had certain ideas of, gosh, this is what David would be so good at. He'd be great at this. I'm going to sit down and I'm going to tell him how he'd be so good at this thing, and then we'll watch him skyrocket. But what I would find is I would sit down in meetings, and instead of having the idea and having all of the information to back it up, the sales points, whatever it was, that if I asked the question, gee, David, what are you interested in? I would get an answer I didn't want or expect, you know? Yeah. And I particularly think of one person on our team who I thought, gosh, this person is a great writer. What a great writer. This person's going to be a grant writer, and they're going to do all these things. And when I sat down, I found out this person is really, really passionate about youth engagement. They are fired up about that. And so listening to her and then changing her job description in a way that benefited both her and the organization in the long term, what I saw was over the next year, she worked much, much harder, was much less tired, was just fully energized by being able to live out her gifts in the setting. And it was instructional for me.
That's awesome. And so I think for a lot of leaders listening to that, myself included, one of the big challenges we all face is recruiting people into a team, into a mission, into a vision. And the vision and mission at Habitat for Humanity is not only about recruiting people into the team, but recruiting volunteers and that kind of thing. What have you learned is essential in your own role, being the executive director, in that recruitment process? What do you spend a lot of your time doing?
I think recruitment is very difficult, and I think that trusting your gut is very, very important in a recruiting process, because you can only see so much through an interview. You can only ask so many questions, and you still only get a snapshot of who a person is in an interview. I think for me, it's been, do I believe this person can and will get this mission in their blood? Is it something that can actually become part of who they are? And you can't necessarily tell that through an interview, but I'm not always looking for the right resume, but I'm also looking for personal traits and personal stories that might tell me something else about a person. This person has tenacity. This person is adaptable. Those kinds of learning traits, I think, are probably more critical than having the right resume.
Yeah, and you embody that in your own leadership, right? As we began the conversation, how your own story informs the passion, the talent that you bring to this work too. I love that. Thank you.
Thanks.
So in those 5 years as well, leading Habitat for Humanity, what have you learned more broadly about the nonprofit sector? What have you learned that's right about it, and maybe what's wrong with it or confused with it?
I think the biggest change that I think the nonprofit sector needs to take is to become more entrepreneurial, to think, wow, we have the biggest problems on the planet. How do we scale up in a way that really meets this growing need, right? We're taking on a project to build 48 homes, but gosh, there are 10,000 households that would qualify for Habitat just in our community. So we need to think a little bit differently. And from my perspective, what that means is saying what an entrepreneur would say, which is, I'm going to pilot this program, this product, and I'm going to see if it works. And you know what? If it doesn't work, I'm going to pivot and I'm going to go another direction, but I'm going to try it. And I don't think that nonprofits are in that habit.
Yeah, I think as you say that, that's such an insightful truth, that nonprofits maybe deal with too much aversion to risk and not enough of that entrepreneurial spirit. I wonder, is it true that one of the things that can maybe hold nonprofits back, is it the donor base, that they're afraid of letting them down? What's that like?
I think there are a lot of great reasons to hold to your core. You know, I think that's a mistake too. So I, what I know about Habitat is that the model works. I know there's less than a 2% foreclosure rate in the United States, which is outrageously successful, considering a bank would have never qualified those families in the first place. Wow. So there are reasons to hold to that core. But I think the challenge to a nonprofit is to not be driven by an expectation that a donor wants you to just stick to this, or to not be open to other possibilities because of a resource scarcity mindset. And what I think is brilliant about StratOp, I remember our facilitator saying, don't just bring in your core group. Don't turn it into an echo chamber in a way. And these weren't his words. But he said, try to get the highest collective IQ in the room of strategic thinkers. And for me, that was really interesting. And I don't know that it was intentional, but it worked. We brought board, we brought staff, but we also brought some donors / supporters that weren't as invested in our model.
Yeah.
They knew our model. They were invested in it, but they also thought, hey, I'm a land developer. This is not the only way to do this. They had other ideas that could inform our thinking and challenge us, really kind of push us. And it makes you uncomfortable because you go, no, but it works. but what if you could be bigger, be faster, be stronger? You know, what if you could meet more families' needs by doing something else? And I think that it was really important through the process was to have that trust and openness and bring in people that think differently.
Yeah, so what I hear in that is one of the ways that you led your organization to be more entrepreneurial is like in the StratOp process, inviting entrepreneurs into the room to help shape that thinking, right?
So, exactly, yeah. Right. And people that just weren't 100% sold out for your way of doing it. It is really hard to get past yourself sometimes. Yeah. We believe in this. We do believe in it. But there might be little tweaks that just could spin you into just impacting more families.
Kristen, how and when did you first intersect with the Patterson process?
You know, I love how our intersection came about because we, like many, many nonprofits, we just want to do the thing that works over and over and over again. So we had a really wonderful and supportive donor that made a huge investment to build a Habitat House. And I thought, this is so great. They should just do this every year because that seems so obvious. And so when we sat down, I talked about that. And then I presented our pretty vague, but probably pretty spot on vision for where we wanted to go. And to the credit of this wonderful donor, they realized, gosh, this sounds like what they want, but this isn't really what they need. And so building one house a year didn't really change us as an organization. It didn't make us more sustainable. It wasn't going to get us to that bigger vision. And so this particular donor said, I think actually what you need is StratOp. And so StratOp was gifted to us, and it's been probably the most transformational thing we've done as an organization.
Wow. And so we're going to dive into that. So when you sort of started learning about the StratOp process, what was the need that you were feeling both personally and as an organization that you felt like StratOp was syncing with, that was going to help you with?
You know, I think I had a gut feeling that we knew where we wanted to go, but that there were some unspoken things inside the organization. There were probably staff that knew what our challenges were operationally. I think there were board members that knew what our challenges were both operationally and strategically. And I think there were a lot of unspoken truths that were sort of sitting down deep inside people's bellies and that maybe they didn't feel comfortable to bring up, they didn't feel safe to bring up, or they just didn't feel like it would be productive to bring it up. Maybe it would feel like, oh, I'm pointing to the problem. You know, nobody wants to be the person that points to the problem. And so I think that's where we were, was we have some great ideas, but we have some real challenges we need to overcome to get there.
And so what would you say to a leader in another organization who understandably so, maybe feeling those same things of, hey, I don't know if it's going to be helpful to bring this up. I'm just going to be the, you know, pull the air out of the room or something like that. What would you say to them? Why should they engage, whether it's with StratUp or with something, why should they engage in a strategic process that helps truth come out?
You know, I would say it may not be productive if you don't have the right process associated with it, but that's where StratUp comes in. So what was so productive and informative about StratUp was that you did have to invest a certain amount of time with the right people, and you had to be committed to the process. You had to stay open-minded. You had to listen to everyone. And what I found fascinating was how the facilitator just so carefully guided you in kind of a circular fashion towards truth. What's the truth that we're all trying to get to? And I don't think anyone thought they had the answers. I don't think anyone did have the answers. I think that collectively, we all saw a piece of it. And when that was brought out by the facilitator, it became really clear. Wow. The thing for me in my gut was, oh my goodness, we're Fort Collins Habitat for Humanity, Fort Collins Habitat. And once we run out of land, we're done. There is not a single available affordable lot in this community under $100,000. I'm going to be the executive director that came into the organization and ended the organization because there's nowhere to go from here. And that awareness of this big elephant that we all felt, the highlighting that, and actually bringing strategy to it and lots of thinking and openness, it gave me a peace of mind that this isn't just mine.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I don't have to own this problem because I'm not Habitat. I'm not the organization. There's an invested community here that can help come up with a creative solution that I never would have thought of.
It's what you were saying before. It's leadership at work, in effect. It's not holding all of the outcomes yourself as the leader, but bringing others into the conversation, trusting their talents and abilities and those things. So,
oh, it is. And the process was hard sometimes. When you say that, it makes me think about this dot exercise where you have to say if something is a green dot, yes, we're doing it. Or yellow dot, yeah, we're doing it sort of a little bit sometimes. And then there's the red dot. It's not moving. It's not moving. And it took me more than a day to have our board chair at the time say, a red dot is a great thing. That's the opportunity to knock something out of the park.
Yeah, that's good.
That reframe of thinking was so important for me because I found myself like defending my position at certain times because you are very passionate.
Yes.
But that defending your position doesn't move me forward.
You're listening to the Patterson Podcast. We wanted to take a quick break from the show to share another of the underlying principles of the Patterson process. This principle is simply called breakthrough is horizontal. In other words, there are vertical silos in every organization. In a business, these might include sales, distribution, engineering, etc. In a church, it might be a youth ministry, an adult ministry, the weekend service, etc. These are what we call vertical silos. But when we come together and think together as a team during the StratUp process, we want to talk and think cross-functionally. In a business StratUp, for example, sales has freedom to speak into engineering. Customer service has freedom to speak into supply chain and on and on. We want to ask questions, offer insights, and make discoveries together. This brings breakthrough. And as we say in the Patterson process, breakthrough is horizontal. Now, let's get back to the show.
And so what has the outcome been for your organization so far going through this strategic process?
You know, I think what was fascinating about, you know, the specific question and that kind of elephant of we're out of land. That particular initiative was really fascinating to me because it validated through the process that we did need to think differently. So we owned raw land, but we couldn't afford to develop it, and we did not have the expertise on staff to develop it. So we had tried a process where we sold raw land to an LLC. A group of individual investors actually developed the land for us. And it had worked, but we weren't really sure if it was a strategy. So the StratOp process said, yes, we're committed to this. We're going to make it work. We're going to scale it up. We're going to take what was developing raw land in 10 units to making it even bigger and trying to develop a property that was four times as big. So what happened was we sold a piece of raw land to this group, this LLC, and because they are not a nonprofit, they thought about it very differently. Mm-hmm. They said, no, you bring together the right skills and you cast a vision. Mm. They brought these incredibly skilled people together and took us through a design charrette.
Amazing, isn't it? The power of gathering different individuals. And as you said before, with your facilitator's goal of drawing out the highest collective IQ and just discovering new possibilities, you know. So as you've gone through the process, you know, one of Tom Patterson, the designer, the founder of the StratOp process, one of his famous quotes is that plans don't self-execute. You know, so just because we have this beautiful plan, this clear vision, doesn't mean that people are going to align around it and that people are going to execute the plan to move forward. So what have you learned about implementing the process, turning it in a sense from a strategic process into your strategic system?
You know, I think that's been parts of that have been easy. What is challenging with any kind of a strategy, like you said, is the implementation of it. And so, you know, what elevates is the thing that's going to have the most impact. Mm-hmm. We need lots. We have to continue building. So let's work on that. You know, something that's resonated for me about the importance of that StratOp plan is that it's there and that we go back to it. And so, you know, we try to keep bringing people into StratOp by having quarterly update meetings and sitting down and reviewing the plan and trying to keep sending people out into the smaller groups and keeping things moving. But quite frankly, certain things get more attention. And what is really great about StratOp is that you get the right things down on paper so that they don't just go away. So even the areas where I don't feel like we have had as much success, not everything is our land development strategy. They're still there, and we had the right ideas to start with. And so the systemic part of it is, okay, we know how to StratOp as a system. So how do we take what worked here, get the right people in the room, and start again?
Yeah.
Sometimes you just need to restart again. Mm. And I think knowing the process is really all you need to start again and to be successful.
Mm. Yeah, understand things around us are going to change. People are going to change. So how do we make this evergreen? How do we make it something that rolls forward as the future rolls forward?
You know? Yeah, it gives you confidence. Yeah. Because even if you only got through one of your three key initiatives, you feel like, oh, that worked. Mm. Okay, that's the secret sauce. Mm. The secret sauce is not necessarily having the facilitator there, though that's really great, but it is going through the process yourself and internalizing it.
Yeah. So before we move into the quickfire round, you've given us so much awesome perspective on Habitat. Just help the listeners understand as well, like the true impact, the full impact of Habitat, not just in Fort Collins, but beyond.
You're going to give me something I could gush about for hours. That's so dangerous. You know, one of the statistics I heard recently that just blew my mind was that Habitat is completing one home every 4 minutes.
Wow.
Throughout the world. Mm. And what amazes me about that, and I think it's really miraculous, and, you know, I don't think that's just my faith speaking here, but I think what is really miraculous about that is the number of hands that it actually takes to make that possible. You know, 300 to 400 volunteers building on every home. So the impact, I think, is for me is twofold. It's that home buyer, right? There's that less than 2% foreclosure rate. They're highly invested, and they are more likely then to become civically engaged. We have home buyers now that are running their HOA boards.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
They never would have considered that kind of involvement had they not been empowered. Mm-hmm. We have a home buyer who works at the city who said, gosh, when I was struggling and renting and nervous about where I would go next, I couldn't really think very far ahead. I was in survival mode. Once she finished her home, she got a classified job with the city. She applied for a promotion. She got into an MBA program. Wow. I mean, it just goes on. And that is pretty typical of what happens with a lot of our home buyers. They are people that are already self-reliant. They just needed a boost. That boost changes the whole trajectory of their family, though, because they're secure. We make different choices when we're secure.
Friends of ours had a sign and custom homeware business, and one of their signs says, "Home is where your story begins."
I love that. And I love it.
Yeah, you guys, with the work that you do, not only building homes, but helping launch so many stories.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. It's just such a privilege to be such a tiny part of anyone's story, and it's really. It's really kind of overwhelming, really, to get to even play a part in it, because you think, this isn't mine. None of this is mine. This is owned by this community. This story of this family is owned by them because of everything they put in, but it's owned by the group of churches that helped to build their home, or the group of companies, or all the breweries, or whatever organization takes it on. We had a home buyer, Rachel, and her daughter is this little mini-me, kind of carbon copy of her, adorable. She's 3. Her name is Ava. She has this little blonde bob. And the donor that helped to sponsor the home, helped to volunteer, said, "Hey, Ava, whose house is this?" "Ava's house! Ava's!" There's a difference.
Yeah.
There's a difference in ownership. She knew it was hers, even at 3. Even at 3, she knew that if she wanted pink walls or she wanted stars on the ceiling or whatever she wanted, that there was a difference in it being hers. Mm. That's pretty powerful.
Powerful and inspirational.
It is. And it makes a difference for the donors, too, because they invested in something that was actually transformational. Yeah. Something that wasn't a Band-Aid. It wasn't a handout. It was something where Ava was going to be twice as likely to go to college now. Yeah. She's 3. But there's a real output there. There's a real impact.
They weren't investing in a home. They were investing in a beautiful story. Let's move, Kristen, into our quickfire round. So just to help our listeners learn a little bit about you as a leader, how you grow and develop. So how do you personally stay refreshed and replenished?
You know, I think that being replenished for me in a professional sense is through ongoing training and education. I think strategic planning is a part of that, but also as a leader personally, continuing to grow. Stepping out of my day-to-day and the operations and being able to get away from that and kind of look at a different level at what we're doing, or to be inspired by other people doing very different things, that's really replenishing for me.
Who's been a great mentor to you and why?
You know, I've been so unbelievably fortunate in this role to have had a board chair that, when I was hired, committed to having a monthly lunch with me before the executive committee meeting, before the board meeting. And that consistency was incredibly important, but the content of those meetings was important. One, the board chair actually cared about me as a person. That was important. I have a life outside of Habitat. But 2, never, ever shortchanged me by giving me answers. You know, I think the thing that I learned from this mentor is, 1, showing up.
Yeah.
If I'm going to say I'm going to be at a monthly lunch, I'm going to be there. And 2, I might have already done this thing that you're going through, and I might know the answer out there. But you gain more if I ask you the questions that help you to get there.
Yeah.
You know, that help you really to think this through. And what was fascinating after 5 years of this kind of mentoring was that this was really recent. I sent an email and said, "Oh, I have this problem. I got to talk to you." And by the time he had called me back, he said, "You called me about this problem." And I said, "Oh, well, you know what I did was I imagined, what are the questions that you would ask me to help me get to the solution?" Yeah. So instead of actually having him help me get there, I told him, here's what you would ask me. You would ask me this and then this and then this, and then I would do this and this and this. So I asked myself the questions and then I did these things. And now it's fine. What else do you want to talk about?
That's great.
It was really remarkable. It was the greatest investment anyone's ever made in me. I think that, everyone should have that.
We call it Patterson, the power of a great question. Well, Kristen, thank you for just guiding us in such a compelling and just powerful conversation and vision around the work that you guys do at Habitat. You build a lot of homes, but I think more than that, you launch a lot of stories like Little Ava's and so many others here in Fort Collins and through the organization around the world. So thank you so much for being here and sharing the story.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Patterson Podcast. Special thanks go to our editor and producer, Mary Wade. And if you're wanting to learn more about the tools, ideas, or resources shared in this episode, please reach out to us at pattersoncenter.com. That's Patterson with one T. We'd love to engage with you, to talk more about this, and to guide you on the journey of the Patterson process.